Welcome to Just Saying It on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loan options for your family. Rocket can.
You know what I'm saying? I think you do.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Cole Thompson.
Live and in charge. Welcome into Just Saying It right here on the Sports Map Radio Network. I am your host extraordinaire, Cole Thompson. You can follow me on Twitter at Mr. Cole Thompson, 800-224-2004. If you want to call in and give your thoughts on the next hour, we got Michael Hernandez producing. But more importantly, we have a great show ahead. 2-minute warning coming up in about 10 minutes or so. The Chicago Bears, what are you doing? I mean, honestly, at this point, what are you doing with the class clown that is the Chicago Windy City Bears? And I want to talk a little bit of college football. There are two coaches right now who are up for potential head coaching jobs that I feel should be right where they are. But let's start off with this. I don't want to really rag a guy that much harder than he probably deserves to, but at what point is Kevin King of the Green Bay Packers just a walking meme? Like, literally, at what point? Not only when the team was introduced in Green Bay on Monday Night Football, the defense came out first. This is, by the way, this is the home opener. This is the brand new season. Fans are all back in the stands. They're excited to see the Green Bay Packers, every other player. We got Kenny Clark. Yay! We have Aaron Rodgers. Yay! We have Kevin King. Boo! 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 Literally, that's how it went. After that, first play, first big drive, Quentin Cephas. They give him up a 47-yard pass. 47-yard completion from Jared Goff. Makes Jared Goff look like an all-pro. First thing out of Packers fans' mouths, boo! Boo! Kevin King, we hate you. We hate, like, literally, it's a walking meme at this point. And you would have thought that Twitter absolutely hated this guy. Packers Twitter lost their freaking mind with how bad that play ended up being. On the night, King had, like, two really good plays, one of which he broke up a touchdown in the end zone. So you got to give him credit there. But my God, man, every single time he makes a mistake, it's like pure hell and agony for this guy. At what point do you feel for him? Maybe it was last night. But Kevin King's time in Green Bay, dude, it's got to end.
Time for the 2-minute warning around the NFL. No. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Cole Thompson.
Each and every day, we go around the NFL, breaking down some of the top storylines you can miss. And we do it in 2 minutes or less. Why? Because it's called 2-minute warning. So, Michael, start the clock.
Tua Tagovailoa appears to have avoided major injury. The Dolphins quarterback, who was forced out of Sunday's game against Buffalo early, underwent further tests on his bruised ribs Monday morning, and the results did not reveal any major issues, with the x-rays coming back negative. On the flip side, wide receiver Will Fuller, who missed last week with a personal issue, returned to the team and is expected to play in week 3.
Yeah, Tua's, obviously, he went out of the game yesterday. We're still running some tests. Didn't a lot of pain yesterday. Still in a good deal of pain today, but we'll call him day-to-day right now. As far as Will was here today, and we expect him here this week as well.
So the good news is that there's a very good potential that Tua maybe misses one game. Here's the bad news. They still have that offensive line. That still is their offensive line. It's not going to get much better. They can't run the ball. They're still having trouble with pressures. The only good news is this week, if Tua were to play, the Las Vegas Raiders right now have the number one pass rusher in total pressures with Max Crosby. He has 19. Oh boy, that's scary. You want to know what the other thing is? They are dead last in team pressures. In total team pressures, they are 31st. Only one team is worse than them. So at least this putrid of a pass protection would be able to say, hey, we're going to double team 98 and really just let one dude just walk right past us, because it's not like he's going to be able to do anything. But man, at what point, if you're a young team, do you not understand this? Any quarterback can be successful if they have a stable offensive line. Because if they have protection, they can make decisions. If they make the right decisions, they can move the ball. If they move the ball, you own the time of possession. If you own the time of possession, you win the game. Wash, rinse, repeat. It's not that hard. And again, I get it. A lot of people said, oh, but look at what Justin Herbert's doing. Look at what Joe Burrow's doing. Right. At the same time, both of these guys are big arm quarterbacks, big body guys, who are allowed to use their muscles and their more so athletic bowed style. Or I don't know how to put it in words. That they're allowed to use that as a crutch. Tua is a high efficient passing quarterback. Guy works best with completion. Guy works best controlling the clock. Very Drew Brees style. Drew Brees had an elite offensive line for a very long time. Early in his career at the Saints, at the end of his career at the Saints, it was easy. It was clockwork. You're not going to be able to do that with a team like Miami when you have a bad offensive line. So if I'm Miami right now, yeah, I'm not fielding calls for Tua, and I'm also not looking at Deshaun Watson just yet. But if you're not going to fix your offensive line, you might as well go get somebody who can play and be a little bit more mobile. Because of Tua, I still think that he'll work. I still think he'll be good, but he needs an offensive line. It's what he had at Alabama. It's what he really needs to be successful. I just don't see him having it in Miami. And I don't see them spending the money this offseason to go fix the offensive line either.
The Houston Texans have looked like a different team than advertised with Tyrod Taylor on the field this season. They will now be without him for a while. The veteran quarterback will likely miss multiple weeks of action because of his hamstring injury and could land on injured reserve. However, for those wondering if Deshaun Watson will see action, think again.
First of all, let me just start off and just say this before I get asked. Deshaun Watson will be deactivated this week, just like he has been for the first two ball games. As far as Tyrod goes, at this point right now, it's day to day. You know, he's getting an MRI. He's been looked at. We'll just see later on this afternoon how it is, you know, what happens, and we'll just take it day to day with him. If he's able to go and ready to go, he'll play.
Yeah, so he's not playing this week. End of discussion. It's the Davis Mills era beginning in Houston this week. But it makes me laugh all the time to hear people go, well, what's going to happen to Deshaun Watson? Immediately, as soon as the clock struck zero and David Culley said, we'll have to wait and see, Twitter went nuts. What does he mean, we'll have to wait and see? Deshaun's coming back. Oh, we got DW4. We're so excited to have him out there. And on the flip side, you also had a bunch of fans go, I don't want him. I don't want him near my team. I don't want him playing. Get him the heck out of the building. So it's a very convoluted conversation to have. But anybody out there who really thought for 1 second Deshaun Watson was ever suiting up for the Houston Texans again, you're crazy. You're absolutely crazy. More importantly, Houston does not need to play Deshaun Watson. I know people around the NFL are probably like, why are you saying that? You're stupid. You're a loser. Dork. I don't think you know the sport. You're right. There's a lot of things I don't know. What I do know is that the only way that Nick Caserio walks away with the most amount of trade capital in return is by sitting a guy who could get hurt. It takes one play for Deshaun Watson to rupture an Achilles, to tear an ACL, to hurt a shoulder, to even receive a concussion. And then teams go, hey, remember last year? He only played a couple snaps. And on top of that, he's also got some injury history concerns. Torn ACL in 2017. Ruptured Achilles in 2021. I don't know if I want to give up 3 first-round picks for a top-5 quarterback. I might as well make you just pay his salary and not play him. You can't play a guy that you're trying to move. You just can't. And you can't play a starting quarterback that you know behind a very, I would say, average offensive line. Could absolutely, on any single play, get destroyed. You can't do that. It doesn't work that way. So when I look at this team right now, Davis Mills may not be the best option, But it was never going to be Deshaun Watson. I don't know where this whole narrative of Deshaun Watson coming back. No, not happening. Quit your dreams. Don't quit your day job. Just remember, at the end of the day, Deshaun Watson's not playing for the Houston Texans. End of the story.
Kenny Galladay's frustrations, which played out live on Thursday Night Football, were not directed at quarterback Daniel Jones. After all in a loss against the Washington football team, when asked Monday, the wide receiver said they were meant for New York Giants offensive coordinator Jason Garrett. Galladay said Monday while adding that he and Garrett have no issue.
I mean, I'd be frustrated if Jason Garrett was my offensive coordinator. I would totally be frustrated. That just is a lot to take in. And again, I get it. I understand that Joe Judge and Dave Gettleman and John Mara all have respect for him. I all understand that they like what he's done and that he was at least somewhat, I guess, successful at Dallas. But I just don't like his offensive approach. I just don't like what his offense brings. And more importantly, if I'm Kenny Galladay, a vertical threat that is able to use my size and speed to my advantage, I don't fit in that system. And so, yeah, I get why Kenny Galladay signed with the team. It's a big market franchise that definitely you can add some pieces. And now that they have a couple of first-round picks in the next two drafts, then, yeah, they're going to be in a pretty good spot to where they can go ahead and land a franchise quarterback if Daniel Jones is not it. But at the same time, man, I mean, my God, at what point do you just understand that the offense is not working and part of it is Jason Garrett? It's like when, okay, it's like when Pat Shurmur was the head coach of the Giants, and I was like, Pat Shurmur is a really good offensive coordinator. He really should be staying an offensive coordinator. Yeah, but we like him as a head coach. Well, you shouldn't. I mean, he hasn't worked before. But we like Jason Garrett as an offensive coordinator. Well, you shouldn't, because he hasn't really worked before. For some reason, Jerry Jones never pulled the plug. He was willing to give him time and time and time again to screw up the Dallas Cowboys. So, I get the frustration. I do. And I think it's completely warranted, especially on play designs where you're supposed to be going after a big frame target like Galladay, and you go the completely opposite direction. So, yeah, frustration, it's warranted. It truly is warranted for the likes of Galladay, especially with Jason Garrett.
Sitting at 2-0, the Carolina Panthers are looking like the next potential breakout team for the 2021 season, and Darnold is clicking on all cylinders, and the defense has taken a big sip on the coordinator Phil Snow. With a short week, however, Panthers coach Matt Rhule is looking to be 1-0 for week 3 instead of 3-0 on the season.
I think it just means we're 1-0 this week and we've got to get ready for next week. And it shows a lot of the things that we're doing well. It's like when you win or lose. You see what you do well, you see what you're not doing well. Like, you know, you can't get a field goal blocked or run back. That just can't happen in the National Football. They can't turn the ball over the 10-yard line. They can have the ball first and goal. We make an unbelievable play. Get him in 3rd and 9, then we let the quarterback run in, which we all, you know, you guys heard me say it this week, guys, to keep Jameis in the pocket. So when those things happen, that's the mark of, hey, there's a lot of things still to improve upon. There's also a lot of great things that happen out there, you know. So we just have to be really honest, you know, about, like, hey, what are we doing well? What are we not doing well? It's boring. It's the same thing I said last year, you know, when we would win or lose. It's just about trying to improve this week.
The good news is that you're improving against a team that is missing its one lone true average but salvageable starting quarterback in Tyrod Taylor. You also have a rookie playing in his first game. And I want to give a huge shout out to Phil Snow. Every single place he has been with Matt Rhule, the defense has gotten so much better in year two. At Temple in year two, they were able to compete for an AAC championship. In Baylor in year two, they were one of the up-and-coming defenses. In year three, they really took off and they actually fought their way. Yeah, the year three, I think, it was year three. Year three was the year they went to the Sugar Bowl against Georgia. So they were, once again, back into the conversation. And in year two in the NFL, Snow has transformed this defense into having, I want to say, it's 5 interceptions. It's six turnovers, I know that. But it's 5 interceptions, I want to say it is, which I think is 3rd most in the NFL. I think it's 3rd most. Sam Darnold, he's clicking. He's working. He's doing the same stuff that he was doing in New York, but he's doing it with Pro Bowl talent. So that, I think, at least mirrors some of the flaws that he has with this game. The offensive line is playing at least somewhat well, and you have Christian McCaffrey back in your backfield. Ultimately, having this game, along with having the injury concerns with Houston right now, is a huge benefactor and a blessing for Carolina. Win this week, be 1-0 in week 3 on a short week, that's great. But you were already can kind of sit here and go, we can feel really comfortable about being 3-0 now that there are injury concerns with Tyrod Taylor and the Houston Texans. There you have it. 2-minute warning right here on Just Saying It.
This is Just Saying It on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need a mortgage that fits your life? Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Cole Thompson.
Are your wiper blades chattering, skipping, or squeaking? Don't compromise your visibility with streaks or smearing on your windows. When it's time to replace those old wiper blades, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts. The professional parts people will help you navigate through their wide selections to find the right wiper blades for your car. O'Reilly Auto Parts will even install your wiper blades free of charge. See better and drive safer with O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices, every day. I talk about this all the time, expectation versus reality. I also talk about the definition of insanity, which means trying to do the same thing over and over and over and over and over again and expecting different results. You're turning yourself into insanity. I do the show every single morning, Monday through Friday. If I did the exact same segments every single morning, one, you would never listen to the show. Absolutely. Why would you? You've heard it yesterday. You're going to hear it again. Why would you want to listen? And number two, I would go insane. Literally just saying a script over and over again. It's why sometimes when you look at method actors, they kind of get lost in their own mind because they're literally saying the same things over and over and over again to get into the character, to get into the mindset, to get into the actual premise of what they're trying to do. And afterwards, they can't break themselves out of it. Chicago Bear fans have got to be the best method actors in 2021 because let's think about it. They understand, they believe, they see the potential of what they could be. And every single season, it just feels like it's the same thing. Walking through the motions, going through the steps, going through every single year. You know, Michael, have you seen the movie? And anyone else, 800-224-2004. Have you seen the new Joker movie with Joaquin Phoenix?
I have.
Okay, so you know when he's put on the makeup and then he does that?
Yeah.
That's how I feel about Bears fans every single day that they wake up. They're doing their makeup. Bear down. Chicago Bears, like just flipping their mouth open. That's how I feel that they are every single day. Because of the quarterback position should be so easy for them to figure out. You drafted a dual threat guy, a mobile, deep arm, accurate, basically up and coming potential all pro quarterback in Justin Fields. And I get it. I said this at the start. I've said this for a while. Justin Fields did not need to start week one. I've come out and said that. I'm very okay with that. Last week, even though he didn't start, you could tell that there was a much different rapport when Andy Dalton left the game with an MCL sprain. You could tell. Yeah, Andy Dalton got the touchdown. Andy Dalton will get credited for the win. But I'm not sure you can say that when Andy Dalton took the field, he felt all confident that he was going to be able to beat his old team in Cincinnati. Oh, boy. Cincinnati. Can we go beat them? The kitty cats? Maybe not with Andy Dalton. Can't. Even though the ginger Glock looks good, he still is the red rifle overall. Flip it around. Justin Fields. Do an interception. One step closer. That's a touchdown. You win by 10. Or, yeah, you win by 10 points. You don't win by 3. At the end of the day, Justin Fields had this to say post-game about his performance, understanding that he is still learning, still growing, still developing as a player, but he gets where his faults are, and he understands where he can improve going into week 3.
I'm just anxious to see what I messed up on and, you know, what I have to do better. Really, I think, you know, me personally, I didn't play well in my eyes. Of course, I played well enough to get the win, of course, but I think there's a lot of room for me to improve. So I'm just going to watch the film and see what I need to get better, see what I missed, see what I, you know, could have done better and just work on that.
Yeah, definitely a lot that you could have gotten better with. There were a couple throws that you should have made that you missed. But overall, the consistency and the feel of what you're expecting from a quarterback was there with Justin Fields, something that I feel like has been missing since Andy Dalton arrived. Now, at the same time, it's not as if Andy Dalton was given a fair shot. The second that Justin Fields heard his name called and the Bears traded up to number 11, we all knew, one, that was the pick, and number two, we knew, hey, guess what? At some point, he is going to take over at quarterback. He's just going to. So Andy Dalton kind of went in with one foot out the door. He threw an interception that was bad at the line of scrimmage against Los Angeles, took some sacks, wasn't great, did enough to get by. Same thing again, did enough to get by. But it always felt like there was one thing that was going to keep this team out. And that was, so long as Matt Nagy elects to run with Andy Dalton, this is going to be a problem. Well, what do you know once again? Even though Justin Fields looks the better quarterback, even though Justin Fields seems to be playing, even though Justin Fields seems to have just as strong as a rapport with this offensive group that still is trying to find a consistent number two weapon, still is trying to find stability in the offensive line, and more importantly, can't block worth crap up front for longer than 3 seconds, which is a problem when you're a quarterback who does not have a bunch of weapons. Are you going to go run with Andy Dalton? Or are you going to run with Justin Fields? Here's what the madman himself had to say about the situation.
If Andy's healthy, is he your starter?
If Andy is healthy, is he your starter? That's something that I'm not going to get into with scheme.
That's not scheme.
Of course it is. That's 100% scheme, Brad. That's 100% scheme.
What do you mean it's 100% scheme? More importantly, what do you mean I'm not going to get into that? I'm just not going to get into that.
Yeah, Brad.
And that's Brad Bix of the Chicago Tribune. So actually, shout out to him. He's a really good reporter. You guys should all follow him on Twitter. Anyways, back to the main point of the conversation. What do you mean it's about scheme? No, there's one thing. Who is going to win you games? You're playing Cleveland this week. You're playing Cleveland. You're sitting at 1-1. And you're about to play Detroit. And Detroit, everyone wants to talk about them. Oh, Detroit, they're the lowly 0-2 team. Dude, they're not as bad as people make them out to be. You know how we were kind of talking about the Houston Texans being a little bit better? Detroit's maybe a little bit better than we expected. They're still a bad team, but you're not that great of a team either. I've said this before, and I'll say it again. Andy Dalton doesn't get you losses. Andy Dalton just doesn't get you wins. You have to have a good defensive outing to get wins. Guess what you had? A really good defensive outing in the Windy City. Joe Burrow threw 3 interceptions on 3 back-to-back-to-back throws. 3 interceptions. What if he doesn't throw those 3 interceptions? Instead, they're 3 touchdowns. You lose. And why do you lose? Because you went with Andy Dalton to start the game, and the only reason Justin Fields saw any action was because your starter got hurt. But you notice there is a trend. There is something positive. There is something to like about that you have with Justin Fields. There's a lot to like about what you have with Justin Fields. And look at this real fast. What's the worst that can happen? Against Cleveland, a team that you're already projected to lose to, a team that you're already not favored in the game, and a team that's coming off of a monumental win with a rushing attack, what's the worst that can happen? Oh, Justin Fields throws 3 interceptions and we lose the game. Okay, well, what if he throws 3 touchdowns and you lose the game? Are you still going to be pissy about it? What if he throws 3 touchdowns, 3 interceptions and you lose the game? You going to be mad? What if he throws 5 touchdowns and 2 interceptions and you still lose the game? Isn't that more of a testament of how bad your offensive line is, or how bad your defensive line is, or how bad your linebacker core is, or how you can't pressure anybody? Isn't it more of a testament to that than anything else? Justin Fields can lose the game, but if he keeps it competitive, at least you're in the game. What's going to happen when you walk out Andy Dalton if he's healthy? 3 and out, 3 and out, 3 and out, touchdown, 3 and out, 3 and out, 3 and out, and then touchdown? Yeah, we had a good game. We moved the ball really well. Oh, yeah, you had 4 first downs in the entire game. Good job. Again, I'm not here to say Andy Dalton is not a stable quarterback, because that's exactly what he is. He's a bridge option. He's a very high-end backup in the NFL. I would argue that he's probably the 4th or 5th best backup quarterback in the NFL. But there is upside to playing Justin Fields. And right now, you're sitting at a hot 1-1, and you have no idea what to make of Cleveland, plus you can beat Detroit. Matt Nagy, stop being crazy. Start Justin Fields.
You're listening to Just Saying It on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, here's Cole Thompson.
So, let's go turn our attention to college football real fast. There's some things that you learned this past weekend about the teams. And there's some things that you learned about where certain players sit and where the Heisman race is going in college football playoff contenders and pretenders. So let's go ahead and break that down. What were some of my biggest key takeaways from this past week in college football? Because this is a big week. Week four, you're starting to see some more conference play. You're starting to see some bigger matchups. These games really count for double, not only in top 25 wins, but they also count towards seeding in the conference. And that does matter when it even comes down to bowl games. Finishing 10-2, but having a win over another team that finishes 10-2, maybe is the reason why you go to a New Year's Six bowl game and they go to the Outback Bowl. They go to the Music City Bowl. They go to the Belk Bowl or something along the lines of that. The Duke's Mayo Bowl. Oh, God. Guys, I'm going to be completely honest with you. I hate mayo. And every single time I think of mayo and I think of somebody eating it out of a jar, the Duke's Mayo Bowl is my least favorite mayo, is my least favorite bowl of all time. Like, it just is the absolute worst. But look at this. The biggest takeaway is that every single year, you see it be the four same teams. Really, it's the four same teams with a fifth kind of hovering around. Alabama, Clemson, Oklahoma, Ohio State, and 9 times out of 10, Georgia's like that number five seed. They kind of just hang around. They're twiddling around. They're right there. They're in the conversation. They're not harming anybody, but they're also not helping themselves. This is the first year where I know for a fact we're going to see two new teams. Every single year, it's Alabama, Clemson, and then switch in either Ohio State or Oklahoma. Every once in a while, it's both, but it feels like all the time. Alabama, Ohio State, Oklahoma, insert team here. Alabama, Ohio State, Clemson, insert team here. Ohio State, Oklahoma, Alabama, Clemson. It's the same. It's boring. It's bland. But guess what? It's normal. Very few times you don't see Alabama. Very few times you don't see Clemson. Every other year you see one of these two teams switch out. I think for a fact, this year is the year where you see two new teams join in. There's no reason for me to believe in Oklahoma. There absolutely is not. I get it. I understand. Okay. Spencer Rattler, there's a rivalry game. Okay. Nebraska, they're playing for something. They're not just playing for pride. But I look at this Nebraska team. They're still not any better than what they were. And for them to go toe-to-toe and actually contain Rattler's day, passing the football, and more importantly, rushing the ball, there's not a lot to like there. There's absolutely not a lot to like about this Oklahoma team. Oklahoma is a very boring, bland, average team that plays in the Big 12 that likely is going to lose one random game, whether it be to an Ohio State, a Texas, a Kansas State, or something along the lines of that. And they maybe just get into the college football playoff conversation because every other team implodes. But production-wise, they've nearly had two upsets in the first 3 weeks of the season, against a team that still scored 21 points on one of the worst SEC defenses in league history last year, and still got blown out of the water by 40 points. By 40 points. They brought them down to the wire. Nebraska loses to Brett Bielema to begin the new era. I get it. It's in Champaign, but you've been there for 4 years. You can't figure it out. You want me to believe that this team is actually a college football playoff contender? I know. I said at the very start of the year, I believe that the second best team in college football was Oklahoma. This is Lincoln Riley's best roster. Maybe it is. But production-wise, he's not getting the most out of it. You know who else isn't getting the most out of it? Ryan Day. Ohio State right now, they are easily beatable. Yeah, they had a very good game for their running attack. They had a very decent game from C.J. Stroud. A lot of things that you saw from this team offensively worked. Why were you struggling with Tulsa? Why were you at all struggling with an 0-2 Tulsa team? You just lost to Oregon. You just lost to Oregon. And you're telling me that even though you won by 20, keep in mind, two touchdowns came in the fourth quarter, and one of them was a garbage touchdown. One was just like, hey, we're done. We know we're going to lose. We're just going to tack on the points, try to cover as close as possible. We're just going to try to do that. That's what it was. three quarters, toe-for-toe, an AAC school, a team that lost to an FCS program week one, hung around with Ohio State, made it interesting. It's because the defense was terrible, because their defense couldn't stop anybody. For the last couple weeks, Nick Saban says it's all the time. Our defense runs S-word I-T through a tin horn. Well, it maybe wasn't S-word I-T through a tin horn, but it definitely was C-R-A-P through a funnel. That's what it felt like. It was easily that kind of style. Ohio State is not the team to beat right now. Ohio State is not even the best team in the Big Ten. You can make a valid argument that what James Franklin has done for Penn State this year, especially with a big-time victory over Auburn, is a more impressive win, and they look more impressive. Easily, Iowa, to me, is the best team. Defensively, they're playing top-notch. They have a great ground game, and they have a good offensive line. Quarterback play is a little bit stagnant, but besides that, they could be definitely a college football playoff contender. Let's just look at the other teams. You have Alabama and Georgia. They easily look the part. They both are, right now, neck and neck the best two teams in the country. If one of them loses, I expect it to be in Atlanta in December. So that means both are getting in the college football playoff conversation. Unfortunately, I have no idea what to make of Clemson. I wouldn't put them in my top 10. I wouldn't put them in the college football playoff. But again, they make too much money. And if they win their division and they win the conference, they're going to hang around. They're at least going to be in the college football playoff conversation. Even if I don't believe that DJ Uiagalelei was able to do anything against Georgia Tech. Even though I don't believe he was able to do anything against Georgia, they get a win. So, I mean, I guess there's that. But you shouldn't be struggling against the Yellow Jackets, who look like they're about ready to fire Jeff Collins. Should look that way. Meanwhile, Texas A&M, they look at least good enough defensively to hang with anybody. If Zach Calzada has a good game this weekend against Arkansas, it's going to be very hard to make them not a top five team. Oregon, yeah, I get it. They played really bad against an FCS. Michael, can you look it up? I think it was Townsend they played. No, Stony Brook. It was Stony Brook. Never mind. You don't need to look it up. Anthony Brown gets hurt. They have a really good game from Ty Thompson in the second half. They look the part. Everything you see from them, they look the part. I take away this. For the first time in what feels like 5 years, it's not going to be boring in the college football playoff conversation. Ohio State has got to figure out a way to get dominant wins in the Big Ten to get back into the conversation. Clemson has got to look better offensively with Tony Elliott's squad. And I don't believe in Oklahoma. I think Oklahoma gets two losses. This is the year that I think Oklahoma and the Big 12 are kind of left out. This is also the year I think the Pac-12 is kind of included. Oregon is too dang good. Mario Cristobal has this team rolling in the right direction. It's really hard when you're looking at the hot hand of Oregon, how their defense played. And by the way, they're doing it without two of their key stars. They played without three of their key starters defensively against Ohio State, and they took them down to the wire and the horseshoe. They look good. A&M looks good. I'll throw Cincinnati in the conversation. They don't look half bad. There's a lot of teams out there that I honestly think could make the college football playoff this year. I don't think that Clemson's one of them. I don't think right now Ohio State is one of them. And I certainly do not believe in Oklahoma. So the USC job has got to be the most coveted position right now in the college football realm because it's USC. It's LA. There's a lot out there. We all know what what USC can be. We all know the type of money that boosters bring in, and they're a college football darling. When you look at the big names in college football, the Nebraskas, the Florida States, and the USCs, the Michigans, the Texases, they're all trying to get back. They're all trying to be quote-unquote back. Now, Texas, as we all know, due to Sam Ellinger screaming, "We're back, and then you're not," kind of thing, is not back. But I will say, Texas, at least, I think, is in the right direction. The biggest reason why is they have the right coach. I'm not sure Steve Sarkisian is ever going to be a national championship winning head coach, but he's stable. And I do think that he is going to be at some point, probably within 2 or 3 years, a top 10 coach in college football realm, especially at Texas. I think he'll be a very good fit to help them transition to the SEC. You need that good fit. The two names I'm hearing right now that make the most sense according to fans, and myself included, I'll be honest, are Luke Fickell and Matt Campbell of Cincinnati and Iowa State, respectively, to take over at USC. The more and more I look into their records, the more and more I look into their style of coaching, the more and more that I'm seeing how they've done,
during their times in Ames and during their times in Cincinnati. They're not USC material. And that's not an insult. That's absolutely not an insult. When I look at Matt Campbell and when I look at Luke Fickell, they're not Nick Sabans. They're more like Kirk Ferentz's. If anybody doesn't know who Kirk Ferentz is, he's the head coach at Iowa. He's been there since 1999. You want to know what else he's had? Dozens and dozens of winning seasons. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 double-digit win seasons. 1, 2, 3, 4. 4 losing seasons. Iowa has been a constant competitor inside the top 25. They've been ranked inside the top 10 on 4 different occasions. Right now, they're ranked inside the top 5 once again. They've been ranked underneath him 9 different times. Iowa's a decent football team. Iowa knows how to win. Iowa knows how to upset. And Kirk Ferentz has done a great job continuing and building the culture week in, week out, yearly in Iowa. The Hawkeyes are a good team. They're a very consistent team. With Luke Fickell and the Bearcats now going to the Big 12, maybe that's easier for him. Maybe now that when you look at how he's recruiting, you look at how the NIL deals are changing the league, and you look at his style of coaching, a guy who grew up in Ohio, a guy who played in Ohio, a guy who has a background at Ohio State and is not getting the Ohio State job. He's just not. Guy who has played and been an Ohio-born and bred guy. Now they go to a bigger conference. That was the biggest thing. Why not go to a bigger conference? Well, now you're going to one. You go to the Big 12. You can win in the Big 12. With the roster that you have and the way you're recruiting, you can finish top 25. You're one in the Big 12. It's not going to be that hard of a jump for you whatsoever. Same thing with Matt Campbell. Campbell, in 5 years, has finally brought Iowa State back to relevancy. Last season, they finished in the top 10 for the first time, I think, either in college, either in team history or like since 1970 or something like that. They've also been to 4 straight bowl games underneath him, and they're right now on the cusp of being a top 10 team again. You're in the Big 12. You're winning games. You're being number 1, very respected amongst your peers. And number 2, the city of Ames loves you. Kirk Ferentz has built a very solid program during his time in Des Moines. He's done a very good job keeping Iowa afloat, just moving along. These two teams in the Big 12 are arguably going to be the next two big names, because think about it. You lose Oklahoma, you lose Texas. Who's the next big-time name in the Big 12? Right now, there is none. With Matt Campbell, it feels like Iowa State will be one, because they have that quote-unquote five-star culture. Luke Fickell, the way he's recruited and the way that he has been able to turn recruits from going to the big school in Columbus and staying in the small school in Cincinnati, it's going to help him out immensely. The best way I look at this scenario is when you see college football coaches, sometimes there are those who are meant to be big fishes in big ponds. Other times, you're going to be a little guppy that's going to get eaten alive by the sharks. But then you could be a really solid fish. You can last. You can have a wonderful life inside of an average pond. And guess what? Every once in a while, that average pond, it overflows. Kirk Ferentz is a very good coach in an average-sized pond. Matt Campbell is a very good coach that probably works best in an average-sized pond. Same with Luke Fickell. Much as I think that both of them would work for both, I would say, Florida State and USC, where they are right now is where they are best. We'll close out just saying it right after this.
This is Just Saying It on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need a mortgage that fits your life? Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Cole Thompson.
One final thought as I leave you every single day right here on Just Saying It. If you're good at what you do, you never work a day in your life. And if you're really good at what you do, you never have to worry about even trying. You know, there's people out there that just pick up a golf club and swing it like 400 yards on the first drive and they get a par. never played golf before in their life. You know, there's people who don't study for tests. They just go out and they just go wing it 94, 97. My brother was really good at that. Never studied, never had to do anything like that. We'd walk into the test. As long as it wasn't math, he'd walk out with like a 92. And I was so jealous of that. Rob Gronkowski has people watch film for him. That is how talented he is still at the tight end position. Last night on the Manning cast of Monday Night Football on ESPN, he talked about how he does not watch film on teams. Basically, get me the ball and I'm going to score.
I practice Thursday, but I don't practice Friday, though. And Friday is red zone day because I don't need practice on red zone day because I'm red zone Robbie G already, baby. I need practice on first down, second down. That's cool. But red zone, I got that down since I was like a rookie.
Yeah, red zone Robbie G. Honestly, he's not wrong. This season so far, he has 4 touchdowns in 2 games. All have come inside the red zone. And Tampa Bay is rolling. When you are as good as somebody as Rob Gronkowski, you are allowed to kind of ease back. Not practicing on Friday, able to make 69 jokes nice all the time, able to be a giant toddler, and be a Super Bowl champion. Gotta love it. That's exactly what you want from your tight end. All right, that does it for me. We'll talk college football and preview week 3 of the NFL season coming up tomorrow. See you then. Later!